Oh, thank you, Mary, for those words of love that we all wished we'd heard or did hear. Thank you for that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Mother's Day to all the moms. My mother passed away nearly 11 years ago, and there isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of her and what a gift she was and still is to my life. I'm going to be talking about one of those gifts this morning, although it took me a few years to unwrap it, I'm just saying. So Mother's Day can be kind of bittersweet for me. It's a joy connecting with my kids and my grandkids. And I want to welcome my daughter and grandsons who are joining us by live streaming. Hi, Mason. Hi, Liam. I love you. And Melody, love you too. And I'm not sure if my son and his family were able to join us. If so, I love you all, Kevin, Kira, Alexander, and Julian, everybody, thank you. So it's a joy to connect with our kids and our grandkids, and at the same time, I miss my mom. I just miss my mom. So it can be a difficult time for many of us. Depending on what kind of relationship we had with our mothers, depending on whether our mothers are alive or not, if we're estranged in some way, or estranged from our children, or if we don't have children, or if we lost a child, whatever it is, there's so many ways this can be a very tricky day for many of us. So while we want to wish all of the moms Happy Mother's Day, we also want to be mindful about how difficult this day can be for some of us. And in that spirit, it seems fitting to be talking about compassion today, about the mothering aspect of God that lives within every single one of us. And it's about the kindness and the caring and the comfort of divine love. And whether or not you would use any of those words to describe how your mother is or was, the truth is that love and compassion are needed for our growth. They're necessary, and luckily, are you ready? We have a whole storehouse of it within our own hearts, just waiting recognition, discovery, and cultivating of it. My talk title this morning is No Greater Gift. We're going to hear from the choir later singing the song, beautiful song by this name. And we're going to see that contained within our hearts, the key to our own healing is already there. It's already there. And that's a great gift, wouldn't you agree? No matter what our upbringing may have been, we can learn to reparent ourselves by discovering the compassionate mothering aspect of spirit within us and utilizing this inner power to give ourselves what we needed and may not have gotten growing up. Learning to do that is a vital part of our growth and our development and our evolution and actualizing our potential in becoming who we really are. Over the past few weeks, we have been climbing a ladder of transformation in a series called Evolution Revolution. There we go. And we've been looking at various paradigm shifts that have occurred throughout human history. And the main question we've been asking is, how does cultural evolution correlate with our own personal growth and development? Does the macro out there mirror the micro within ourselves? And what can we learn about ourselves and our evolutionary journey from this? So by examining, did I do that? I did do that. Oh no, I didn't. Never mind. By examining the various worldviews throughout history utilizing a system known as spiral dynamics, we see how these worldviews connect with our own individual development. And we're using the colors from this system as we go through this. And if you remember, we began on the very first rung of our ladder with beige survival during the prehistoric times when survival was the name of the game, the only game in town, 250,000 years ago, and we compared that era to infancy in our own personal development, a time when our very survival rests on our caregivers. And then we moved on up the ladder to the next period that emerged, namely purple tribal life, when people banded together in tribes for safety. And we compared that to the magical toddler years that we had, where we are becoming part of the tribe, part of the family tribe. And last time, we looked at red warrior energy, the hero. It's a worldview that brought forth the feudal system and landowners and slavery and the Wild West shoot 'em up stuff, rugged individualism, personal power. And we saw how that sense of self-empowerment factors in during our upbringing, that this is the time of a formation of a hopefully healthy ego. And today, we move on to the next rung. Are you ready? Because we're moving on to blue, which emerged 5,000 years ago as an antidote to the red lawlessness. Blue emerges to tidy things up. Blue is a more traditional worldview. The pendulum swings from red mayhem and lawlessness to group structure in order to rein in all that personal power. With the appearance of the establishment of the rule of law, with organized religion showing up in this time period, order-driven authority structures. And I find it fascinating that during this period, as the culture transitioned from red to blue, many philosophers and spiritual pioneers were born in various countries and regions around the world, including India, China, the Middle East, and Greece. Iconic figures like the Buddha, Plato, Socrates, Elijah, Jeremiah, Confucius, and Lao Tzu, they all lived within this period. It was a pivotal era of great social change and dynamic revolutionary transformation in human thought, and it was known as the Axial Age. And out of this period comes structure, guidance on how to live, with the appearance of the Eightfold Path in Buddhism, the moral teachings of Confucius, the philosophical guide of the Tao Te Ching, warnings from the Hebrew prophets on the right way to live, repent, the foundations of Western philosophy from Socrates and Plato. So there was an institutionalizing of religious beliefs during this period. And that really, I find that so fascinating. There is some conjecture of where we are on this this ladder of evolution, because where we're going to get to in this series, and I promise, is that we'll come up to the present time and we're going to look at what's next for us. What's the paradigm shift on the horizon? And there are some questions as to whether that paradigm shift might be a second axial age. So with blue, loyalty and obedience are rewarded. Follow these rules and you'll get to heaven. You see? And there's a strong belief that there's a right way to do it, and that our way is what? The right one, exactly, yes. This worldview fosters passionate patriotism, and bonded in this case not to the tribe, but to a larger purpose, sacrificing for something noble. And how does it show up today, in this culture today? Blue is very conservative, traditional, banks, police, military, schools, fundamentalist religion. And the us and them that started to show up in purple, my tribe against your tribe, becomes polarization. You're either with us or you're against us. And if you're one of us, you're okay, but different culture, different religion, not so much. That's very blue thinking. There is a movie out on Netflix right now called Come Sunday. I know some of you have seen it. How many? Yes, you've seen it. Spoiler alert, I'm going to tell you some of the story, but I recommend you get the movie and watch it anyway. It's very, very well done. And it's the true story about an African-American preacher, an evangelical pastor from Tulsa, Oklahoma, by the name of Bishop Carlton Pearson. He was a fire and brimstone preacher. And he had a large congregation, around 6,000 people. He was a prodigy of Oral Roberts, very, very successful. And then he had an experience of divine love. Just kind of blew it for him right there. Why? Because he felt the presence of God so strongly that he realized that the hell and damnation that he had been preaching with such great passion over these years was simply no longer true. And that he couldn't bring himself to say it anymore. And that the God of unconditional love that he now knew redeemed everyone. It didn't matter if they were part of the chosen. And so he shared that the following Sunday with his congregation. And they loved it. No, they did not. He lost most of his congregation. There was a mass exodus out the door. People left the church in droves. They had to sell the building. They had to auction off everything. And he was deserted by all of his real strong supporters. In fact, they went around the corner and started their own church without him. Oral Roberts denounced him, said that he was being deceived by the devil. And people tried to convince him to recant, you know, just recant and come back. But he couldn't do it, not after experiencing the love of God. Now, he still speaks in Tulsa at the Unitarian Universalist Church to a much smaller flock who gather to hear his message of love. And when I watched the movie, I realized that what I was witnessing was a clash of worldviews. That when you have a very blue, conservative, traditional congregation and you suddenly foist on them a new alternative view, you know, the result can be devastating, as it was for him. People left because they thought they would be going to hell if they listened to him. And I saw how difficult it can be to move out of this worldview because of the cost that comes with it. But when you no longer believe what the prevailing culture does, it can be very difficult to step away without feeling that loss. By the way, Carlton Pearson is very popular in Unity circles, as you might imagine, and is one of our speakers at our convention this year in June. So he's doing okay. So in our human development, this is the time period of our childhood when we're learning the rules, right? Learning the rules, learning the roles that we're going to take on. Finding where we fit in, conforming to the social norms of the culture. Now, ideally, what happens in this developmental stage is that we learn impulse control and self-governance and develop a healthy conscience and a moral compass and learn to set healthy and safe boundaries so that we can express our red personal power in a safe way. That's ideal that that happens, but not always. Beige says, I will survive. Purple says, I belong. Red says, I matter. Blue says, I do the right thing. I do the right thing. It's about the roles and the rules, or what we might call BRULs. How many of you remember what that stands for? Okay, one, two, three, we're all going to say it together. One, two, three. Rules. Thank you. BS rules. That's all we'll say. Tricked you there. Because the cultural, what it's referring to is the cultural and social rules that we learn, and they are not necessarily healthy ones as we learn as we grow beyond them. But nonetheless, these social rules become internalized into a sort of a hidden map. And we look through this map at the world. We can't look at the map because we're looking through the map. We don't even know we're following this map, except if we stray off the path, we have this guilt and shame that shows up. So in our family life, in our school years, in our social world, this is where we don the mask of social acceptability. Do you know what I'm talking about here? So we're talking about school age, where it's about right appearance, stability, fitting in, group norms, acceptance. And it's a time when, as George Orwell put it so succinctly and well, you wear a mask and your face grows to fit it. I thought that was very well put. It describes this era of our life very well. Learning the social rules and then not straying outside the lines. And in the family system, we learn at a very early age what's expected of us, what our role is in that family, and we take on those roles. And if you've ever seen the John Bradshaw Family Mobile, you know, with the scapegoat and the enabler and the lost child, all those things. When somebody breaks the rules, when somebody steps out of the role that they have taken on, the whole thing falls apart. Everything's out of balance. It all goes haywire. So this is part of what this developmental stage is, taking on roles that balance the status quo. And when we do that, we are donning the mask. Do you see that? Do you see how that happens? Because as we've seen so far in this series, these early formative years have lots of potential landmines for us that can lead us to taking on beliefs that are not the truth about who we really are. And I know in my own life, during this learning the rules period, I took on wearing a mask that said, I don't measure up. I'm not good enough. I don't measure up. And here's one of the reasons why. I literally didn't measure up, first of all. My birthday's in December, so in Canada, that means you're the youngest kid in the class. And I was little for my age, so I was this tiny little pipsqueak, and I was with a lot of kids that were a year older than me. Well, and if that wasn't enough, then I skipped a grade. I went into grade 3, came out in grade 5. So now I end up with classmates 2 years older than me, and I went from friends who played with dolls to friends who went out with boys. And I never did learn the new rules. I missed some crucial ones in that step. I started high school at 12. And again, I was tiny, tiny little nerdy kid, you know. And I spent years trying to figure out those rules, trying to catch up emotionally, feeling like I didn't fit in. Now, on top of that, I had something else to contend with in my life. My mother, that I miss so much, my mother was a strikingly beautiful woman who could stop conversation when she walked into a room. In her younger years, she had movie star looks. And those of us of an age, if you remember Connie Stevens and Debbie Reynolds, people were always comparing my mother to those glamorous movie stars. My mother loved fashion. She knew how to wear makeup. She knew how to do hair. She always looked dazzling. And everybody loved her and adored her, especially me. But I did have this one little problem. I didn't look anything like my mom. See, I didn't look anything like my mom. You could never see a family resemblance if you looked at the two of us. You wouldn't even know we were in the same family. Now, my dad, I looked like him. And don't get me wrong, nothing wrong with my dad, but if I had a choice, you know, sorry, Dad. And I had many a chat with the universe about this when I was growing up. Because people, especially in my years of being that nerdy little kid, would take one look at my mom, and then they'd look at me, and then they'd look back at my mom, and they'd start scratching their head, and I knew what they were thinking. Some of them would even blurt it out, "What happened to you?" And I wondered that too. Now, let me assure you that I've had half a century to work through this, and I have found peace from it over the years. So there's a happy ending here. We can all just relax, and it's all going to be all right. Interestingly, I had a particularly powerful healing moment around this in my more recent past, courtesy of one of my great heroes, heroines in life, Carrie Fisher. And her mom, Debbie Reynolds, right? Yes, there she is. The one that my mother looked like, right? Debbie Reynolds. When Carrie passed away in December of 2016, you may remember that her mother, a couple days later, also died. And at that time, I happened upon an interview that Oprah had done with the two of them in 2011. And I watched it. I'd never seen it before. And at one point, Oprah asked Carrie how it felt to grow up in the shadow of a glamorous mother. And I sat forward for this, and she said, "I felt like a thumb." And I said, "I know how that feels. Oh my God. And there's nothing wrong with thumbs. They're great for use. They're useful for peeling oranges and loosening car jar lids and texting, you know, video games. They set us apart from much of the animal world. They're very functional. but they are not glamorous. And so I could understand Carrie's description. It rang true for me. I know what that feels like. But then there was an unexpected bonus that came from that interview later on with something Debbie Reynolds shared. And it helped me see something that I had missed before. And she proudly announced that by far her greatest joy in life was that she was now known as Princess Leia's mother. The tables had turned, and people no longer saw her as the young, glamorous movie star. And when she said that, I flashed back to a memory of my first ministry in my hometown in Canada. And my mother would be sitting right where you are, Mary, front row every Sunday, beaming away. And she loved being known as Jane's mom. In fact, she would introduce herself, "Hi, I'm Jane's mom." I'd say, "Mom, you have a name." "Oh, no, wants to be Jane's mom." And I realized at that point that sometime in her life, my mother had traded glamour for relationship, happily so. And I think those years of being a beauty queen were a great burden for her. And as a young adult, I finally came into my own, just as Carrie did. I stopped wishing I could look like my mom. I became my own self. But those years of feeling like a thumb have taken their toll. It's not so good for your self-esteem, especially in those pre-adolescent years of trying to find where you fit in socially. That was so tough for me. Did you ever feel like you didn't fit in when you were growing up? Anyone? Yes. I mean, we all have our own version of this story. It may not have been quite as dramatic and in your face as mine, but we all get messages that are less than healing. They don't tell us the truth about who we are. And we take on beliefs that we're not good enough, don't measure up in some way, the world's not safe, whatever it is that we do. It's just part of being human that that happens. So we want to have great compassion because that's the gift in it. The big gift is that we can now, as adults, revisit those years and reparent ourselves, addressing those limiting beliefs with love, with compassion, changing them into new life-affirming ones. And we do that through the Q
process.
Yes, we do. And I want to invite any of you who may be suffering from anything from this era of your life to do it. Use the Q process. It has helped me immensely to overcome this. The greatest gift that this era brought to me was this: that I had to turn within to find the beauty of life. That I just gave up trying to be my mom, trying to be as beautiful as my mother, and said, "I'm looking elsewhere." And finding this deep well of love and compassion, the divine feminine within my own heart. And I cultivated it. I developed that compassion both for myself and for all of us that have been through this crap. Really. And I no longer feel like a thumb. I'm happy being me. What a great gift that is. Now, there's another gift that comes from this stage of development in our lives, and that is the development of self-discipline. That's where we have the inner strength to go and do this healing work. Now, self-discipline may not be on the top of your list as your favorite attribute. But what I discovered is that it turns out that compassion has both a feminine and a masculine side. The feminine side is the loving, the nurturing, the kindness, devotion, compassion, those lovely things. The masculine side is discernment and discipline, having the courage to look within and see what these pain points are when we've been triggered, and then discerning what that means. And then having the strength and the discipline to overcome whatever's in our way, making changes when needed. Both aspects of compassion are necessary to transform our lives. So blue energy brings structure, order, tradition, guidelines to live by. The danger is we can get so stuck on following the rules, we're afraid to step out and color outside the lines. Now that definitely happened to me in my childhood. I stayed safely within that box until I became a teenager in the 60s. Sorry, Mom. Then the struggle was even more difficult for me. I wanted to stretch my wings, and at the same time, I was very fearful of the consequences. So I had this dichotomy. And we need to find a balance between tradition and innovation, you know, between compliance and cooperation, between a healthy conscience and guilty self-condemnation. You know, we want to find that balance. Structure and order are good and necessary, but if they become a prison cell, they are not. And we want to keep it in balance. Some of those family rules we learn, not so good, not so healthy. And we want to clean up what may still need to be integrated. But on this paradigm climb, we're not just fixing the unhealthy stuff, we're also enhancing what's working. Remember, as we climb up this ladder, we transcend and include what came before. We don't lose the altitude we've already gained as we climb. So keep what works and heal what's holding you back from stepping up to the next rung. What's holding you down? What's weighing you down on your climb? That's what you want to clean up, and the cue process can be so beneficial for that. So when it comes to rules, I say it's time for new rules. Any Bill Maher fans here? If you are, don't worry. These are nicer rules than you might see on his show. New rule, question everything. Those family traditions may have survived because of their value. Then again, they may be just what's holding you back from evolving into your next grandest version of who you are. So are the rules you live by weighing down your trip up the ladder? If you find yourself saying things like, well, we've always done it that way, well, it's a bit of a clue. That might be. So simply question what you have accepted as the way it is. Byron Katie has some great questions to ask to get the ball rolling, starting with, is it true? Question your thoughts. New rule, give yourself compassion if doing any of this brings up fear of breaking the rules. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and break the law. I'm just talking about widening your inner playground a little. And if you feel discomfort, give yourself the mothering, the nurturing, the caring kindness that already lives within your heart, the same way you would do it for a child who is feeling anxious. Because compassion brings forth a higher functionality that helps to override the fight or flight survival reactivity. See? It's really a powerful thing to do. And finally, new rule. Remember the masculine aspect of compassion, discernment, and discipline. When you find yourself triggered, look and see what may be there. Look, and then use your self-discipline to rise up and do the work to overcome. If you have done the cue process, do a worksheet when you're triggered. If you haven't done it, the next one is July 21st. Mark your calendar. Here's the thing. We are here to face our own stuff and to grow beyond it. Do you know that about yourself?
Yes.
It's our greatest task in life is to get beyond our own rules. But it's time. Isn't it time? It really is. It's time for us to step into living a smaller version of what we want to see in the larger world. I read this morning that to be a good parent, become the person you want your child to be. So it's all about our own transformation. Parker Palmer said it simply and best. We're here not only to transform the world, but also to be transformed ourselves. And that is the greatest gift of all. And so it is.
Thank you, Jane. And I want to thank all of you for providing an environment for us to be ourselves. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths for God, for we know that there is only one presence, one power, one life. So whoever you are, and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone who's here for the very first time. If this is your first time visiting with us, please feel comfortable, and feel comfortable raising your hand. Our ushers have a packet for you. Anybody here for the first time? Welcome.
Welcome.
And on the packet,
there we go.
On the outside of the packet, there is a form you can fill out to be handed to be added to our mailing list for our weekly e-newsletters or quarterly newsletter. If you are interested, please fill it out. Drop it in the love offering basket as it comes around instead of feeling obligated to give a donation. Also, after the service, take the packet over to the barista stand and get a free beverage of your choice. And you can take it to our bookstore and also get a CD of today's talk if you are interested. And we are very glad that you're here. Now it's time to welcome and greet each other with a handshake, a hug, a high five, a wave, a namaste, whatever works for you. We begin with this welcome song.
We're going to sing a gathering song. If you can stand up, we'd love for you to do that.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Yeah, it's good afternoon. Yeah, we're getting closer, aren't we? It could be good night if people don't sit down. Oh. My name is Jim Sledge, and I am the treasurer on your board of trustees. And this is the time in our service where we welcome and receive your gifts, your tithes, your love offerings to support this place where we all belong. So if you would take that gift in your hand and bless it with all the love and gratitude that you feel, and let's join in saying our prosperity blessing together. I know
that my giving blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have, and all that I give and receive. I give thanks for the abundance that is mine to share.
And so it is.
So I'd like to take just a quick, brief moment.